Hello, friends, and welcome to your midweek edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. Welcome to another mailbag special, and welcome back to me. That's right, back from globetrotting the globe. I'm back from the Maldives, and I'm buzzing to be sat here in this very seat with two of my very best friends, the boy Roscoe and the Dr. Stuart Watson. Rossi, you've thrived in my absence. I heard you using words like instalment and post-mortem, and I thought, wow, this guy's coming on leaps and bounds. How are you?
Yeah, I'm trying my best to add to my vocab. I won't be saying vocabulary because I struggle to say that sometimes. That's one word I'm still trying to improve on. But very well. Welcome back, Gaffer. Me and Stu have been in the big dog chair, but the big dog is back. And yeah, hope we've kept it warm for you.
Oh, it's lovely and warm. So warm. Watto, you're in charge in my absence. You did a sterling job. Did you have to whip the young guns into line on at least one occasion?
No, absolutely not. No, I like to think there's a bit of McKenna man management going in there, getting the best out of Ross, sort of pulling some of those words out of his backside from nowhere. I mean, instalment is mightily impressive. So, yeah, no, lads were good. Been a busy old time. So good to have you back.
I've got a bit of a bone to pick with you all, actually, friends. As you, I'm sure you'll agree, I am a big noise. The Grand Fromage. Very big deal indeed. Heath Towers smells of rich mahogany, and I've got many leather-bound books. So when I go away for 2 weeks, things are meant to fall apart, right? I was expecting to come back. Ross has actually deleted the entire podcast. We've missed deadline at least once while I've been away on the night game. Get back. It's been like clockwork. You, friends, especially you, Watson, you're making me look expendable. I come back. The only thing I'm surprised about is that AJ's not written a food review while I've been away. Stepped in my grave there as well. It's not good enough, Watson. What have you got to say for yourself?
I've got nothing to say on that matter. So I'm pleased you're back and recharged. We managed to cope, didn't we, lads?
Yeah.
But it's always good to have some extra squad depth
exactly.
for the run-in ahead.
If the shadowy figures are listening, I am needed and I am absolutely worth that massive salary I'm paid. I'm in that weird nether zone now, boys. Do you get this from a holiday when you kind of, you know, anger, denial, acceptance? I've gone through anger, which is coming home. I'm now firmly in denial, which is where you try and extend the holiday by carrying on as if you're still on holiday, still eating and drinking like you're on holiday and walking around the house in flip-flops, even though it's like 8 degrees. Yeah, very much in that. Do you do that, Rossi, when you get back from holiday?
Yeah, very much so. Definitely if you've been to a very hot country and you come back and it's pissing down with rain.
Mm.
And obviously it has been pissing down with rain since you returned. So I hope you've enjoyed that. But funny little fact, actually. There was two KOA Marks in the Maldives because Mark, a.k.a. Jobster, part of the KOA posse, was also in the Maldives the same time as you, which was a bit of a weird thing. Did you bump into each other? Maybe, I don't know.
No, there's quite a lot of islands in the Maldives, quite big. Quite a big place in terms of islands. So, no, we weren't on the same island. But I did get messages from him, Ian Bentley, and Paul Gerard, I want to say as well. Messaged me on social media to say they're all either in the Maldives as I was or heading out there. So, guys, thanks for getting in touch and I hope you're having a great time. It's a beautiful place, the Maldives. Highly recommended. It is as close to the idyllic, I guess, version of paradise as you could ever picture, really. So, if you are thinking about it, absolutely get out there. Beautiful, beautiful place. Not a lot to do. You have to like the sea and therefore being in the sea and like lazing around a bit, but absolutely worth it. Anyway.
Is it better than Cromer? I've been there this year and got a couple of days lined up in Yorkshire later in the year as well.
Well, this is the thing.
How does the Maldives compare?
Everyone's version of paradise is different, isn't it? For me, I'd also say the Scottish Highlands are paradise. Peak District is paradise. But the Maldives is the kind of, I guess, the iconic version of, you know, the azure seas and the white sands and 40 degree weather, all that kind of stuff. It's a very cliched, I guess, version of paradise, but we love cliches on this show, don't we? So absolutely, everyone's paradise is different. There are many versions of paradise, but if you get the chance to go to the Maldives, I'd 100,000% take it and go on a seaplane, friends. That was something I did for the first time. That's an unusual experience, quite claustrophobic. Never entirely sure if the plane is flying or falling. And a plane landing deliberately on water didn't sit too well with me. We got there in the end, and I'm back now alive in one piece, which is great. Friends, shall we talk about some news before we get onto mailbag? We've got a lot of mailbag questions to go through today, which I think is probably the best type of show that we do. So it's nice to come back to. But some news since you last spoke. We'll just do a quick news roundup. Stewie, you had some news this morning. Not unexpected, of course, but three Welsh Dragons in the town side called up and will potentially be playing two, at least one, but potentially two very important games for Wales.
Yeah. Messrs. Moore, Broadhead and Burns all in the Wales squad, as you say, not unexpected because they've been regulars of late. Kiefer Moore, long established in the Wales squad. I think he's nearing 50 caps now, has been to major tournaments, the World Cup and the Euros before that, and has obviously hit the ground running with Ipswich since coming on loan on January deadline day. Burns and Broadhead have kind of come into the setup a little bit later in their careers, particularly in Burns' case. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a double-edged sword for Ipswich fans. Everyone's sort of proud that they're representing their country on a big stage. We'll wish them well, but there'll be a bit of a holding of breath that they come back from that unscathed. They're big games for Wales, obviously a chance to book their place at the European Championships in Germany this summer. The way the qualifying groups work, they now got into some playoffs. So they play Finland first, I think, on the Thursday before that international break. And if they can beat them in Cardiff, they then play the winners of, and I'll double check the notes, it's Estonia versus somebody else, which I will look up now as we're talking. So they've got to win a couple of games, both of them in the Welsh capital, to progress. So something to keep an eye on. Poland, Estonia.
Yeah. Good luck to the boys, obviously, and the main concern for us here is that they, as you say, Stu, come back injury-free. Just over your right-hand shoulder there, Stu, I'm noticing a new feature at Watson Towers. Is that a Lego globe?
It is.
Is that a new addition? Is that something you put together since I last saw you?
Relatively new, yeah. I got it my birthday in January. I've only got around to making it recently.
Was it
fun? I'm not going to try and pick it up because it's very fragile and it will fall to pieces.
I bloody love Lego. I've come to Lego later in life. As you can see here with the DeLorean. I've got many other Lego things around the house. Good fun, isn't it? It's not for kids, though. This is serious Lego. Rossi, you were watching the under-21s in a downpour yesterday in terms of news. You thought it might be off. You hoped it was off, I bet. But no, you were forced to trudge to Playford Road and sit in a storm, both covering, in terms of words, and pictures. How was it for you?
Wet, boys. It was very wet. I have to admit, I looked outside. I went, oh, the game's definitely off because it's rain and cats and dogs, as the cliche says. Messaged good old Andy Warren, formerly of this parish, Hutchie, of course, to us, saying, is the game on? He said, I'm not up there, mate. So I don't know. So I was like, okay. So I headed down there. Obviously, it was, you know, raining. And the game, I actually missed, and you didn't know this, this is actually exclusive on this podcast. Whoa. I actually missed the first 2 minutes because they kicked off 2 minutes early. So I wasn't expecting that. So nonsense. I could have missed the goal, but thankfully I didn't. I think I just missed a free kick that hit the wall when I asked somebody. So yeah, they won, which was a good thing. Most of the goals were in the first half. Got the pictures, got the words sorted, but got very wet and actually got home. Obviously, we'll get onto the McKenna thing in it shortly. Mm. But I went home, changed my clothes, had a shower because I was freezing my butt off. And had a cup of tea and then went out again.
You weren't wearing shorts, were you, Rossi?
No.
So they won 2-0. Mm-hmm. Cameron Humphreys played. There was an excellent trialist keeper as well, wasn't there? Tell us all about it.
Yes. Cameron Humphreys ran the show, as you would expect, with his quality. And then Solomon Honor, who's on trial currently from Blackburn. He's with them at the moment. 17-year-old goalkeeper. It was at Man City's youth academy for, I think, 8 years, something like that. But yeah. Had a pretty good display from him. But yeah, great name, Solomon Honor.
I just wanted to sign him just because of the headline possibilities. A game in which he saves a penalty and Kiefer Moore scores. We could do strength and honor. Oh. Gladiator. I like that. So yeah, absolutely. I don't really care if he's any good. Sign him because of his name. And the other thing you just mentioned there, Rossi, by way of news before we get into mailbag, you went to see our Lord and Saviour Kieran McKenna yesterday in an unusual environment. He was opening a furniture store. And you and AJ went down to have a few words with him and get a few unusual pictures, shall we say.
Yeah, it was for Find, of course, which is a great charity, food bank charity. And McKenna's been there before, I think, Christmas doing those food parcels and stuff like that. And they've got some great volunteers down there. And yeah, they're opening up a new furniture store, which is great to see. He, of course, had to cut the ribbon. I was a bit disappointed that there wasn't a massive scissors, though. That would be great for picture-wise.
You need massive scissors at an opening. What are you playing at? You need massive scissors. There's got to be massive scissors or a massive check. Those are the two things you need, a photo opportunity regarding either money being raised or a store being open. So there were no massive scissors. Disappointing.
Yeah. But no, it's great. Obviously, you know, the club for a long while back under the Marcus Evans era, community was sort of put aside by it. Since the new owners come in, Mark Ashton, the foundation, doing some great work. And yeah, McKenna was there, you know, saying hello, checking out everybody. Got some snappy snaps of him, of course. And then they opened it up and they said there's refreshments. There was like cup teas and biscuits and stuff like that. Obviously, I went straight and got a biscuit. standards. That's what I said. You have at it, everybody. So yeah. I went for it. But no, a nice day down there. And it stayed dry during the period because there were some speeches going on and there was like no cover. And I was like, thank God it's not raining because this would be very miserable. And McKenna was very well dressed as well. He's a very well dressed man. He parked really well as well. That's coming from me who can't drive or park. But he had to really, anyone watching him, and he had to park in a very tight angle. He's actually parked near AJ. And we were impressed by his parking. He actually got out of his car and said, that's a bit of pressure for everyone watching on, but he got in there straight away.
Everyone will want me to ask Rossi, what whip is he driving? What's McKenna pushing as a car? Is it the classic cliche footballer Mercedes?
Not a Mercedes, an Audi. It's an Audi. So I don't know what to make.
We're talking black. SUV? We're talking...
Yeah, I'll say so.
you don't know, do you?
No, no. He hasn't got a personal number plate.
Good.
So,
that's a good sign.
Good old K-Mac. If not, maybe K-Dog or K-Mac's not available, so he couldn't get it. But no, good driving, K-Mac.
Excellent. He'll be delighted to hear that from you, Rossi. He doesn't strike me as a man who would go for a personalised number plate, McKenna. Kind of the opposite, I would say, of his outlook on life. And I should say, obviously, the first part of Alex's chat with McKenna went online yesterday. He's also done a really nice chat with him about Town's work in the community and why they're partnering up with places like Find, which should go up first thing Friday morning. Very good read. So get involved with that. Now then, friends, from news to questions. I know you did a mailbag last week, but I always love a mailbag and it's a good chance to get some more questions in from the KOA Army. So the usual question there, Stu, do you want to start with football or not football?
Not football. You could have gone from news to muse.
Oh,
how about
like
that
it.
For a segue?
I like it. What Watson, of course, stood in as well as podcast host while I was away. I mean, literally making it look as if I'm a complete waste of space. Absolute joke.
Not sure about that.
You came up with For All Your Hair Everywhere, which is a much better sting for Manscaped than even they have got. So we'll be using that going forward. I've also just realised I'm promoting a former sponsor. Just ignore that, friends, if you're watching. Definitely don't Google ginger pickle. Right then. Kieran Newbury wants to know, boys. He says, this weekend, the Euro Millions is at 110 million. What would be each of the Kings' purchases that would shout, I wouldn't tell anyone I won, but there would be signs? Stewie, if you won 110 million, you're not an ostentatious individual. So you'd like to keep it under your hat. Mm. What would you be spending that cash on, do you reckon?
I think me handing in my notice might be the first giveaway sign.
You wouldn't carry on working. Honest. Pathetic.
110 mil. Million pounds. Yeah, just carry on. I'd keep that on the down. 110 mil. I don't think you'd struggle to keep that under wraps, wouldn't you? But I don't know. First purchase. First little thing. Maybe when I sort of return from Turkey with full head of hair or something, that might
ponytail.
That might get it away. Yeah,
yeah. He's gone full Ibrahimovic. Roscoe, how about you? I dread to think of you. You know, the concept of people having wealth and it corrupting them. You with 110 million is a terrifying thought, Ross.
I'll invest it. I'll give it.
No, you wouldn't. What would you invest it in? Yourself. No. That's what you'd invest it in.
Yeah. Remember that guy that won the lottery years ago?
Yeah,
it was a bloke, wasn't it? And he built like a dirt track for racing.
Yeah. Yeah, his name was Carroll, wasn't it?
Carroll, that was his name. Okay.
No, his surname was Carroll. I can't remember his first name. He was the Lotto Lout, wasn't he?
That's it. That'd be Ross, I think.
Yeah, he spunked it all up the wall.
Yeah. my first purchase, oh boys, and it will just be easy for me to get the games. I'll just get a helicopter. I'm obviously not flying it. But, yeah. And Jake, Stu and AJ can come as well. I'll let you guys come in. And we can just fly, you know, to every away game, pretty much. Maybe Portland.
Yeah. Have a little helicopter pad somewhere as well. Yeah. Obviously, you'd buy a house, Rossi. You'd be able to really go to town on your marriage as well, wouldn't you? In terms of your upcoming nuptials, you'd have that in. Where would you get married if money was no option, Ross? Where would you go?
Ooh. Yeah, you don't have to write. You can just bring anyone, can't you?
Yeah.
Italy would probably be it because that's where all my family is.
Yeah.
Or just Barbados or something. Just an island. Buy my own island. So just.
Yeah, you probably could. I mean, 110 million, you probably could find yourself an island somewhere. The island of Falls. If it were me, you would suddenly find that I had about 15 dogs, I reckon. And my humidor would be growing exponentially. Let me tell you. And my collection of whiskies as well. And plus, you, as you say, I'd be traveling all over the place. I don't think I'd be, wouldn't be hosting this podcast anymore, put it like that. Right then, shall we do some football? The sweetest of Welsh princes, Harvey Davis, wants to know. This one for you, Rossi. Is George Edmondson unlucky to not be in the side at the moment? Now, we know clearly there is an established starting pair at centre-half. And I saw a lot of people after what happened on Saturday, wasn't it? My days were all over the place at the moment, suggesting that maybe there need to be a few changes made at the back. Should Edmondson be starting, though, Rossi?
Just have a quick look at his last game. Last game was the West Brom 2-2. Obviously came in really well for Burgess when he went off with Australia. You could probably say yes, in a way, because he played pretty well.
Who was you starting for, though? Who are you dipping out? Wolfie or Burgess?
Do you know what? I think Wolfie's potential one. Because, Burgess obviously is just solid, isn't he? He's just solid. Mm. And obviously, they've all got mistakes in them. You know, different players do. Even Axel Tuanzebe could probably go in centre-half. So, you know, that he'll be going, hello, I'm here as well. I can play centre-half. Right back, okay, I've done well there, but I can play centre-half. I think when player you're in form and then you get dropped. But then, as I said before, I think McKenna doesn't drop players because you're out of form. It's just, you know, just the position, the opposition we're playing, you know, just how they sort of set up. Maybe George Emerson will be thinking, maybe I shouldn't have been easily not starting, you know, after Burgess come in. But there's an interesting debate to have, definitely after the goals were conceded recently. Obviously, they'll look at the defence and go, ooh, they conceded a few goals. So maybe he's a bit harshly undone by not starting.
What are your thoughts on this? You launched into a passionate defence of Wolfie before I went away, when people were suggesting that maybe he's been out of form. Edmondson, the fridge, is there a case that he should be starting, do you think?
Yes and no. I think when we looked at Ipswich's best players in January, George Edmondson was certainly in that conversation, didn't do an awful lot wrong during that period that he was in the side. But Wolfenden and Burgess are an established centre-half partnership who have done really well all season. Both bring different qualities. Wolfenden's presence is vital to the way that McKenna wants the team to play. So, I guess if you're George, you're probably thinking, I've gone from being one of the team's better players to now not even getting on the bench when you've got nine substitutes. Feels a bit harsh, but we know that the manager likes to overload the bench with attacking players if possible. As Ross says, there's two sides of the coin there, to be honest. But I mean, the whole they conceding too many goals, defence therefore needs changing, is a bit too simplistic for my point of view. I think the goals they score are scored as a team. It all comes, how many times do we see goals scored through build-up play that comes from the back, right from the goalkeeper all the way through. Same, you know, you can defend from the front as well. And I think there was an element of that with the goals that were conceded at Cardiff. So I don't think it's suddenly like change the centre half and you fix the goals being conceded issue that we've got here.
Yeah, okay. Next question from Chris Bennett. So he wants to know, if the players and management staff continue to tell us they don't look at the league table, do you think they think Rotherham are competing with us for promotion? Now, this is obviously a cliche that gets trotted out a lot from McKenna and co. We don't look at the table. We focus on ourselves. And that is clearly part of the mantra, trust in the process, the daily things, and the end goal will come. Do you genuinely believe, though, Stu, they don't look at the table?
Of course they do.
Yeah, of course they do.
Of course they do. They're fully aware of it. But there's a difference between sort of being aware of what the table is and kind of obsessing over it and making it the kind of crux of your team meetings and pre-match chats and all that sort of thing. So maybe we should test that. Next time I go and see Kieran McKenna, I'll just hold up the league table and go, big reveal time. Yeah. And then I just kind of peel back something that's hiding this table.
Where do you think you are?
Yeah. You're third. Yeah. And his jaw just hits the floor. Yeah.
Are we? Yeah. Excellent. Right then. Another question for you then, Rossi. Chris Peachy, Peachmeister, a close personal friend of the show, although not technically a friend of the show. Hello, Kings. He says, simple question. As someone who enjoys non-league football, I was wondering if any of the Kings have a favourite non-league side. Now, this is good. I noticed that Peachy, because I follow him on social media, when Town aren't at home, he tends to take himself off and watch a non-league game. So he's been all over Suffolk watching non-league games. So certainly someone who's got a bit of experience watching the non-league game. Have you got a favourite non-league side, Rossi? I've got a little bit of a soft spot for Bury Town, because obviously I moved to Bury when I was a teenager. They were the local football side. So I've always kind of had a passing interest in how they're doing. And now, even more interesting, with Cole Skuse at the helm, they're doing incredibly well. They're currently riding a 16-game unbeaten streak. Looks like they might be pushing for promotion this season from Isthmian North, which is tremendous for Bury Town. Do you have any little soft spots for non-league sides, though?
I wouldn't say I've got a favourite. There's a few that I just follow because it's, you know, Suffolk and stuff like that. And obviously, there's sometimes we have Itchers Town connections anyway because, you know, players at the end of their career, they go on to play for them. I've also got loan players as well that I'm doing at the moment, obviously. Bury's one of those with the Cole Skuse connection. There's also Felixstowe because of that's where the Itchers Town Women's play. So I'm down there most Sundays. So and they have nice little, you know, people down there and the nice little sit up. I've got a sweet shop, as I've mentioned before. although they stopped doing they still got that. They stopped doing chips, but they do have a seaside burger, which is very nice. So if you've never been to Felixstowe, go down to the Asia Arena. Leyston as well. Weirdly, there's just a lot of Itchers players there as well now. Although they have got a Norwich connection with Darren Eady, but ignore that bit. But there's a lot of Suffolk clubs who are doing pretty well. Woodbridge Town obviously got Luke Holm in charge, so a lot of Itchers connections. But yeah, if I get an opportunity, I try my best to go to a game. Need a market, Kevin Horlock in charge. I'm going for all of them now.
You're just listing all the Suffolk non-league sides now, Rossi.
Yeah. It's always good to see how they're doing. And obviously, the last two pre-seasons, we've played games at Felixstowe, obviously, this summer. Last summer, we were at Needham Market. We actually played Maidenhead United at Needham Market as well this pre-season just gone. So I'm sure there'll be another pre-season game against one of these Suffolk teams. I don't know who will be next. Stowe Market are struggling, I have to admit. They haven't won a single game all season. So all the best to Stowe Market. But that's me done. Stu, I'm taking all the thunder here, I think.
Here endeth Rossi's tour of Suffolk non-league sides. Stu, have you got a favourite non-league side?
It's not left many left to pick from, has it?
You don't have to be in Suffolk, mate. It could be anywhere. I used to have a little bit of a soft spot for Forest Green Rovers when they're in non-league, just because I like the name. And I used to play with them on Football Manager back a long time ago. Mm. So I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for them as well.
Lowestoft Town was... I covered their run to the FA Vars final.
That's right, yeah.
Quite early on in the job, sort of mid-2000s that was. So I've kind of had a soft spot for them. Since then, Needham, more locally, just down the road from where I live. And we've been there, as Ross says, in pre-season a couple of times. Always had a warm welcome where I scored my... I like to bore you all with the tale of me scoring a goal in a charity game that came at Bloomfields as well. So, in general, we wish all our Suffolk teams well. And I think it's always great when Ipswich fans support their local long league clubs when possible.
Absolutely. Rob Hughes wants to know, is there a phrase in the English language to describe a number of successive football matches being scheduled with short intervals between them that doesn't include the words thick and fast? I think the answer, Rob, is no.
Fixture pile-up?
Fixture congestion. Yeah, thick and fast always tends to be. I mean, the other big cliche, and I know you kind of hinted at it on the last pod that we're getting into the season of. You know what it is, don't you, boys? It's the cup finals klaxon. And I know actually that Sheffield Wednesday, Danny Roll, already sounded that klaxon.
Has he?
This weekend, yeah. The 10 cup finals. We've got 10 cup finals left, he says. So no, that is just part of the football vernacular, Rob, that games come thick and fast. And we all just have to deal with it and accept it and move on. Daryl, friend of the show, number one. You can help me out with this, boys. Daryl Jones over in Jacksonville. He says, when a player is sent for a hot dog, how far do they need to go to find one? Are they available on the concourse? Do they have to go outside the ground to a burger van? What if there is no burger van? How far from the ground would a player have to go to get said hot dog? Player being sent for a hot dog, this is not a term I'm overly familiar with. Is it a thing, Stu? What is it? Does it mean...
Well, it's like... Yeah, it's when somebody kind of drops the shoulder, sells someone a bit of a dummy, and they're left kind of sliding on the ground while the other player just sort of stands on their feet. That, to me, is being sent for a hot dog.
It's a very American term, if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah, a little bit. Do you get... I suppose what would be the British terminology, being sent for a bovril?
I don't know. Yeah.
Can you recover from being sent to a hot dog, I guess is what Daryl's saying here. I mean, if there was a hot dog vendor literally just the other side of the advertising hoardings, is there potential for you to hop over, buy said hot dog, and then get back on the pitch and recover the situation? I'd say that's unlikely.
I'm not sure a mid-game hot dog's ideal nutrition-wise either. Get that down here with a bit of fried onions. Rossi, you're a big fan of hot dogs, I'm assuming?
I love a hot dog, yeah. Yeah, I do. Although I don't think they sell them that often in football grounds. I think there's some that sell
them. They must sell
them
at the burger vendor at the corner of Portman Road there.
Yeah, the fan zone, yeah. There's a lot of good food options in the fan zone. Well, of course, we get the media scran. There's been a few times me and AJ have like gone, maybe we should try that out. Get it on expenses and all that jazz. Doesn't that cook you there? But yeah. I like those just cliche and phrases. They're just great. But yeah, gone for a hot dog.
That's generally not one that I've really ever heard. So you've educated me there, Daryl. I appreciate it. I can't say as I'll be using it, but at least now I know what it means. Friends, let's move on. This is a good question from Ed King. I like this question. He says, and this is random, who was the best Paul Cook signing? Right? Now, obviously, there were 19 signings in Demolition Man summer. And I recalled... made the foolhardy step of ranking them all at the time. So before you answer this question, boys, I'll just quickly review the full 19 signings and where I had them ranked. Number one, Bersant Salina. Number two, Sam Morsey. I wrote, the final signing on deadline day could well turn out to be the best. Three, Kyle Edwards. Four, Cameron Burgess. Five, Connor Chaplin. Six, Hayden Coulson. Seven, Macaulay Bonn. Yeah. Eight, Scott Fraser. Nine, dear old dream, Rakeem Harper. 10, Joe Piggott. 11, Louis Barry. Louis Barry was ranked above Wes Burns on my list. He was 12th. George Edmondson, 13th. Lee Evans, 14th. Christian Walton, 15th. Matt Penny, 16th. I'm having that. 17th, Kladke. 18th, Tom Carroll, I'd say. And then 19th, of course, Shawnee Aluko, who is still with us and has proved quite a valuable member of the squad. I'd say a fairly mixed success there for me. But if I had to pick a man now, I would clearly say Sam Morsey, who I kind of intimated at the time I ended up being the best. I'm claiming that one. Stewie, would you go along with Morsey, or is there another name in that list that you like the sound of?
There's probably only one other contender, and that would be Connor Chaplin. I think I've been pretty clear in sort of stating how important Sam Morsey is to everything on and off the pitch consistently on this podcast, but you can't overlook what Connor Chaplin has done in terms of the goals that got Ipswich promoted, the goals he scored a level higher this season, and his role in this leadership group that Kieran McKenna talks about, and how he's bought into everything that the club stands for, with his role as a trustee with the foundation and everything like that. So it's between those two. I'd find it very difficult to split them two, I'd say.
How about you, Rossi? Can you split between those two? Can you vote for a winner? Or is there someone else you're going to pluck? clearly.
You know, Wes Burns would be up there as well. He was the first of those book signings. Obviously,
12th on my list.
He went from Fleetwood. Obviously, he played well against us, and he actually scored on that final day of that season before he signed. But obviously, he's got a connection with Mark Ashton before, so you always think, was that more of like a Mark Ashton signing, really? You know, some of these you think, are they really Paul Cook signings? I won't get into that anyway. But yeah, Sam Worsley-Cotter, it's hard to decide because they're both so valuable. Sam Worsley, skipper, leader among men, Connor Chaplin, loads of bloody goals, and he's Connor Chaplin. So yeah, it's tricky to for that, both of those. But in terms of the money spent on them, not much, was it really? Like Wes Burns was not much. Sam Worsley probably wasn't much. And even Connor Chaplin wasn't that much. So bargains, I'll say.
No, I was just going to say, reading that list is a reminder of you know, A,
mental.
How many of the key group now were signed by Mr. Cook. And also, I think that's also credit to Kieran McKenna for kind of not doing what a lot of managers do, and that's wanting to rip it all up and start again and get their own players in. He's managed to get more out of virtually every single player that you've just mentioned there, hasn't he?
Hayden Coulson, eh? I'd totally forgotten he even existed until I read that list.
Do you know what? When you look back on what went wrong for Paul Cook, Hayden Coulson isn't a name that would necessarily spring to mind straight away, but the left-back issue was what really held Ipswich back under Paul Cook. His style of play and system is very similar to how Kieran McKenna is playing now, and it was based on fullbacks wanting to get forward and join the party, and Hayden Coulson was meant to be that kind of marauding left-back that was ultra-fit, like Leif Davis is now, and injuries just held him back. And I think by the end of that season, Ipswich had played with something like 8 different players at left back. Bailey Clements played there for a while, Miles Kenlock. There's so many different players that had to play there. So you'll never know whether a fully fit Hayden Coulson might have helped Paul Cook, but one of those great unanswerables.
Good question. Thanks for that, Ed. Right then, a couple of people have asked a similar sort of question, so I'm going to have to take it. I'm loath to mention this. It's kind of the elephant in the room. Ross Wishart, I hope I've pronounced that right, Ross, because I get it wrong every single time. He says, is the Old Farm derby story arch about to reach its perfect conclusion? Drubbing at home, our own manager telling the fans to foxtrot Oscar, heartbreaking 13 games over 15 years, only to go and do them at Wembley and secure our berth in the promised land. And there's also a question from Andrew, pretty much the same. How do you feel about the potential of Norwich in the playoffs, either the semi-final or even worse, the final itself? I'm going to start with you here, Ross. It's not really something I'm massively keen to even think about. But as it stands, clearly, if the season ended today, that is what would be happening in a reverse of the Mick McCarthy playoff season from those years ago. How would you feel about it if that did indeed come to pass?
Mixed emotions, really. Obviously, it would be exciting. The build-ups to those games, and I'm sure that's what, you know, Sky and everybody would love because of the derby, and everyone so wants a derby in the playoffs. But from the 2014-15 season, obviously we're in a different place back then. We only just about got into the playoffs. I think it was on the final day. I think Darren Bent missed a penalty. So we lost against Blackburn. Right. Darren Bent missed a penalty for Derby against Reading. And obviously we got in there. But this time around, we're obviously, you know, a newly promoted team. Norwich, of course, they're just getting results left, right and centre. We're, of course, still doing what we're doing. So mixed emotions about it, really. Obviously, we'll love it if we beat them. But, I don't know. I don't know how I could take it. last time, obviously, I was a fan. So I was in, you know, in the ground. Loved the Portland Road game, obviously. Didn't like the second leg at Carrow Road, obviously, because, you know, we lost. So it's a different, you know, feelings right now. So I'm going to be pitch side taking snappy snaps. But I don't know. I don't want it, really. But if we do, yeah, just bring it on.
This would be such a Norwich thing to do to get into the playoffs, wouldn't it? Despite the fact all the stuff that's going on there. Stewie, it would be a great way to get to the playoff final beating Norwich, clearly, or indeed going up by beating Norwich. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I think that's the reaction when you speak to every Ipswich fan at the moment. Like, it couldn't be. It can't happen, can it? But if I take a step back and strip the emotion out of it, 20-point gap between the two teams in the table, that has to count for something over a two-legged game. At the moment, it's looking most likely for it to be a semi-final. So a semi-final matchup, I think you'd back Ipswich all day long. They were far the better side in that reverse fixture leading up to Christmas. Yes, Norwich have improved since then. They're looking very strong at home. They've got Sargent back. They've got some good players in Sarr and Sainz who's starting to come strong as well. So I think it would play out a semi-final a bit like that one back in 14-15 where, you know, we had to really kind of convince ourselves that Ipswich had a chance going into those games and their spirit and all that would give them a chance. And they stuck in it, didn't they, over those two legs. But ultimately, Norwich's greater quality showed. And I think that would happen in reverse this time around. A game at Wembley, one off.
Can you imagine?
I mean, the amount of emotion that went into that last meeting at Portman Road with the team bus and everything, the build-up to it, the everything afterwards with what happened with Delia and everything. I don't know how everyone's kind of nerves would be able to kind of deal with all of that. Try not to kind of think about it too much at the moment. But we're nine games out now. And if the season stops now, that's what's happening. So,
a final at Wembley, Ipswich versus Norwich. God. I'm not sure I'd survive it.
A trip to Wembley as well, the new Wembley trip as well.
I'm not sure I'd make it. I'm not sure I'd survive it. Yeah. Right then, where should we go here? Ian Wallbank wants to know, who are the King's favourite sports commentators down the years? Three from any sport. He said, for example, mine are from boxing, Harry Carpenter, Ian Dark and Jim Lampley. From football, Motti, obviously, Barry Davis and Brian Moore. You got favourite commentators, Rossi?
Of course, there's the classics, but I have to admit, and you'll not be happy with me because I know you are a commentator yourself. Most of the time, I mute the commentator.
Okay, fair enough.
But I like Peter Drury because obviously he was the commentator for the playoff final back in 2000, and he's still, of course, doing some great stuff. Of course, Motti is the legendary voice of, you know, many people. I do like the guy who does the, I don't know his name. I don't know if he's a new guy, but you know, when they do the, after every, you know, when all the games are done and they do, what's the word? Can't think of that word.
That's roundup?
There's a highlights? Proper word for it. There's a proper word. You know, when they do all the results, he says all the results.
Oh, the classifieds.
That's classified. That's the word. Yeah. New word to say. I love that guy. Just, it's just Town 2, Norwich City, Neil.
Stopped doing that now, haven't they?
Have they?
It doesn't exist anymore.
I think that was a big thing about it, wasn't it? That they knocked that on the head.
You used to be able to tell, didn't you, just by the tone, whether the score was going to be a loss or a win. Yeah. Ipswich Town 2, Norwich City 0.
I had the chance to do that once.
What?
It was
for real?
Yeah. They came to our university. I went to journalism at Bournemouth, and in our sort of local student bar, I don't know why they had a talk from, I can't even remember who, somebody from the BBC came down. I think it might have been a commentator. I can't remember who it was. Did a talk about the art of commentary and all of that. And then they said, right, up on stage, I want you to do some commentary over some footage. And then whoever we think is the best will read out the classified football results live on the BBC on something like Football Focus at the weekend. I say I got close to doing it. I bottled it. I didn't go up and do it. But the person who did it did indeed read out the classifieds.
Wow.
Have
you got a favourite commentator, Stewie, from your time watching sport?
I feel like I don't watch loads of football live now because I'm kind of reporting on football.
Who was the golf commentator who was brilliant? Was it Peter Alice?
Peter Alice, yeah.
He was amazing, wasn't he? He always had these little kind of aside stories that he'd tell in between. Because obviously the beauty of golf and also, I guess, the stress of golf when you're a commentator is there's a lot of time in between shots to fill. And he just used to go off on little stories, didn't he? And sort of chuckle to himself. He was absolutely brilliant, Peter Alice.
Yeah, whispery, whimsical kind of tone while you're sat there late on a Sunday night watching the Masters.
Yeah.
Feeling all cozy on the sofa. Yeah. That's a good shout.
I would say, obviously Motti, iconic. Barry Davis was brilliant. And from boxing point of view, I really like Mike Costello, who was a long-time radio commentator. And I think a lot of times sport on the radio is almost better if you've got a good commentator, because you can kind of picturing it through their descriptions. So yeah, Mike Costello is brilliant. He does now do TV commentary, but it's kind of ruined the magic of it for me, because I'm so used to listening to him without being able to see the pictures, and now I can actually see them. It's kind of ruined it for me. But anyway, he's a very good commentator, and commentary is a difficult skill, friends. If you ever get the chance to try it, it's not easy, particularly when you're trying to do things as live and at speed. And of course, our favourite commentator on this show is Glenn Wheeler from Ipswich Town. Things he's been on this show before. Sam Edwards, inspired by noticing that Stu follows Russ Cook, aka Hardest Geezer, on Twitter, not calling it X, says Sam. He's apparently a guy aiming to become the first person to run the length of Africa. What historic feats could the Kings become the first to do? I know one that you could do, Stu, and I thought we might actually do this during lockdown. We never got around to it. Was break the world record for pen spins on your finger, on your thumb.
We tried it once, didn't we?
In a minute. Five on this. Yeah. I did actually find there is actually a world record for it. And you weren't that. That's it. Oh, no. The magic has gone. The magic has gone. But I remember we tried it and you were quite close on your first attempt and you hadn't even warmed up. So yeah. I reckon that could be yours. Rossi, you could probably break the world record for most driving theory tests taken without passing, I'd imagine.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm getting close, but it's definitely getting to that point. One I'm wanting to attempt, and I'm saying this now before starting it.
Yeah.
Did have a little look, and I've looked at the most Jaffa Cakes eaten in a minute is 17. Furious Pete is the record holder, so I may give it a go. I've got some Jaffa Cakes in front of me now. I haven't got 17, but I've got two, but I'm going to have one in a minute. But
You're in training?
Yeah, I'm training.
Yeah.
That was a whole packet a minute ago, but I've just...
Yeah. 17 does not sound that many to me, because they're not massive, are they, Jaffa Cakes? I guess they're quite spongy, though.
Although I think there was another thing. Someone did another competition. Someone ate, let me quickly find it, 102 in 3 minutes. So that's a lot in 3 minutes.
Wow. So, I think maybe we should do a KOA world record special where we all try and break a world record. You can do Jaffa Cakes. You can do pen spins. I've always fancied myself at the old cream cracker challenge. You know, the most cream crackers you can eat without taking a sip of water. That could be a good one. I don't know what sort of record AJ would go for. Something related to hitting high notes or doing pirouettes on ice, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe combine the two.
Absolutely, yeah. Whilst reciting football stats.
Mm. On the driving test theory one here, yeah. I've just done a little quick Google. Story here from 2021. One luckless motorist flunked their driving theory test 157 times at a cost of more than £3,600.
Wow.
42-year-old man, so... that's the record that you're trying to avoid, Ross.
Ross might be 42 by the time he passes it. Yeah. where are we now on the number of attempts, Ross? Do we know? Are we sitting? We must be up near 20s now.
No, I'm only on 10.
What?
Only on 10. Because of course I keep forgetting to go to them.
Okay.
So yeah, but I have passed it once. So I don't know how that sort of.
Of course, you did pass it, the saga of COVID.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'll be eligible for that record because I've technically passed it.
Interesting. Maybe
the current run is 9, I think. Eight, because I passed it, I think, the second time after doing it. But yeah, I keep getting asked so many times to different people and they just go, keep going, Ross, keep going. One day. I'm going to book another one soon and hopefully get it. Sorted.
We go again.
Exactly. We pick ourselves up. We go again. On to the next one.
That is one thing. Andy Warren, once again, name checking him again. I don't know. Obviously, he left us to go to Ipswich Town. But that was the first thing he came over to me and asked. Actually, I bumped into a service station and he said to me, Stu's text me. You've found another one, haven't you? Yes, mate. You just get it done. So, for everyone out there, I want to get it done for you.
Take Sam Morsey's advice, mate, and hashtag come back stronger. That's what you need to do. Yes. Come back stronger.
Get a yellow card. Yes.
Right, a few more questions. Before we move on to talk about Sheffield Wednesday and other things, Foyster wants to know, and this one's for you, Stu, how many points do you believe Town need for the top two out of the last nine games? He says, I reckon 22 out of 27, scraping it with a small 100 points total. I just can't see it. So it feels like it's going to be a record number needed, Stu. 27 points left to play for. How many do you reckon Town would need? Get the feeling that all three of them might just carry on winning.
Well, Leeds have just won nine in a row recently, yeah, which shows you what they're capable of.
Wouldn't it be mad if Leicester finish in the playoffs?
That will take some doing, won't it?
Yeah.
I can't see that.
There's a lot of pressure on Leicester. A lot of pressure. You look at the financial side of things.
You say you can't see that. I mean, Ipswich are 4 points behind them. We saw a Leicester, I think Leicester had an 18-point lead over Ipswich not that long ago, and you can see just how quickly, in a click of a fingers, things can turn. I really don't know what sort of number's going to be put on it. Ipswich have got to, we know at least they've got to better one Leeds result to leapfrog above them. Pressure, I think we've just got to hope that pressure can do funny things to people, and that the teams Ipswich are trying to catch are going to feel that pressure a bit more acutely than Town are.
You would certainly say that in that race, that there's less pressure on Town than anyone else, wouldn't you? That is true. And certainly the likes of Leicester with the financial penalties, perhaps, if they don't go up, there's a lot of pressure on them. So, and AJ's, of course, hot take that Leicester wouldn't win the league, which at the time was mental. What were they, 12 points clear at the time? Looking better by the day, isn't it? So we shall see. One more football question from Danny Greenfield. Ross, he says, when Kieran McKenna leaves for Pastures New, who's the first Town player he'll come back for? For me, it's Wolfie. He's the linchpin for the way McKenna plays, and he'd be the most difficult player to replace in the Town team stylistically.
He's not going anywhere, obviously, Kieran McKenna, but for the time being. Depends on which team he's at. Yeah, I think Wolfen's probably the main candidate. I'm trying to think the other part of the squad, because obviously they're going to get a bit older. Most players, yeah, probably it's pretty Wolfie, really. Obviously, he loves Connor Chaplin, but is Connor Chaplin going to Man United? I don't know. Am I saying?
What about Leif Davis?
Oh, yeah, obviously. Bloody, sorry, Leif.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Leif. He'd be the one,
yeah,
wouldn't he?
He'd be up there as well. Yeah, if he, yeah. So
Kieran's going to Man United. Is that an exclusive?
Exclusive, absolutely.
Yeah, why not? I think that's any team he wants to go back to. So, yeah.
Wolfie. Any thoughts on that, Stewie? Would you reckon Leif Davis, Wolfenden would be the players that McKenna would come back for? I suppose it depends where he goes.
I think Leif is probably the main candidate. He looks like he's most Premier League ready out of all of them at the moment. In this kind of hypothetical situation where Kieran goes, he's not going to go to Man United, but he might go to a West Ham or Brighton or someone like that, and that's probably where a Davis could land next. Wolfie, maybe, but not convinced that he'd turn straight to him. There's not loads there that you'd worry that I think you know. So I don't think he's going to come back and try and sign three or four or anything like that. Looking at it, like Ross says, with the age profiles of them. So, yeah.
Right, two more questions, and I've got a big question to finish with. Robert Enderby wants to know your favourite quote in sport and why. Stewie, we work in a business of cliche, of words being repeated. Media manage players churning out the same things time after time. It hasn't always been that way, though, in sport, friend. Have you, someone who's worked in this business for 20 years or so, have you got a favourite quote? It doesn't have to be from your time. I'm just in the history of sport. Have you got a favourite quote?
There's lots of Michael Owen quotes that I enjoy. When they don't score, they hardly ever win.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourites. You can't look beyond Mick McCarthy. He had some good ones, didn't he, during his time? Anything around J. Emmanuel Thomas, which was
the classic.
I'll start calling him Jet when he looks like he's got a rocket up his arse. I think at one stage someone said, oh, you know, J. Emmanuel Thomas excites me as a player, Mick. And he said, well, Halle Berry excites me as well, but I wouldn't play her on Saturday.
Classic, Mick.
He did have some good one-liners.
Yeah. Have you got any, Ross, that spring to mind, quotes-wise?
Obviously, there's that classic, and you'll love this, because there's a picture of him behind you. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Hands can't hit what the eye can't see. So,
rumble, young man, rumble. Ah, that was it to complete it. Yeah. But yes, you're right. Muhammad Ali was a quotes machine. If you even dream about beating me, you better wake up and apologize, etc. When I think about quotes on sport, I think about, in my opinion, the greatest manager of all time. And this is controversial saying this on the Ipswich Town podcast, but that's Brian Clough. He had some unbelievable quotes. The quote about my particular favourite, I think, was I wouldn't say I'm the best manager in the business, but I'm in the top one. That was fantastic. And I think it was a, I can't remember which player it was, but it was a great quote about him saying that they'd had a disagreement, which we talked about for 20 minutes, and we decided that I was right. Fantastic stuff from Brian Clough. And also a truism from Mike Tyson, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. That's true in life.
Yes, obviously there's one from Boy Robson, you know, what is a club in any case? And of course that goes on and on in a good way. I'm not saying, you know, it goes on and on. There's a lot of words in it, but it's the noise, the passion, the feeling of belonging, the pride of the city. It's a small boy clumbering up the stadium steps and all that for their first game. But yeah, that's a nice little quote. And, you know, it's always great when there's like a kid going to their first game, walking up them steps and seeing the stadium for the first time and just going, so yeah,
it's like I love language, I love words, I love quotes, but it's so sad. We just don't really get that anymore. The kind of a lot of the personality of sport has been taken out of it by all the media management and people being afraid to say anything and all that kind of stuff. And you go back to the days of Ali and people like that. That really was a golden time in terms.
We've had Zlatan in recent years, haven't we?
Yeah, not quite the same sort of. Yeah, but yes, that was good quotes. Good quotes from Zlatan. But Zlatan is an exception to the rule now in the fairly dull battlefield of sport when it comes to quotes, Siri, I would say. Mm-hmm. Final question from Callum Pritchett. He says, do you fold? He says, talking about how you eat a slice of pizza, obviously. Ross, you are an Italian, a Neapolitan, a man from the place, the home of pizza. If you tell me you eat pizza with a knife and fork, you will immediately have your Italian card revoked.
No bloody chance. Even when they offer you a knife and fork, there's some pizza restaurants, they're very, you know, classy. I've been to a few, and I'm going, nah, mate, I'm getting stuck right. I'm picking it up, putting it right in the mouth. Anyway,
it is the way to go, though. Everyone folds, don't they? You get a slice of pizza, you fold it. There's many ways of folding it. I have a rule. One of my many life rules. I don't trust anyone who eats pizza with a knife and fork. It's literally designed to be picked up and eaten. That's the nature of the food. Stewie, you a folder?
I have been known to use a knife and fork.
Oh, you make me sick. Why'd you do that?
If I'm eating out, I feel like it's a bit messy, especially if no one else is eating pizza at the table, if everyone else has got pasta or whatever. I don't want to be sort of shoveling it in and getting all messy. If I'm buying a slice for a takeaway on the go, or I'm just, I've got a takeaway at home, then I'll fold. But there's a time and a place. That's all I'm saying.
I would always say, cut it up. Ask for a cutter, eat it with your hands. You wouldn't eat a burger with a knife and fork, I would hope. And for me, pizza's the same thing. I also don't trust people who don't like cheese. Claim they don't like cheese. Got to be suspicious of anyone who says they don't like cheese. Always pay for extra legroom seats on flights. Another one of Heath's rules. If there's
don't
lobster,
wear belts.
What? Don't wear belts.
Don't trust people who don't wear belts.
Ah, okay. Is this where's this come from? Is this a genuine one or is this an office quote?
Oh, no, it's just a genuine one.
Not in a car, obviously, because you know it gets
a belt around your trousers.
Yeah.
That's a good one, actually, Stu. If there's lobster, order it. Another good one. If you can pay someone to do a job better than you can do it, absolutely pay them. Talking about DIY here. A few of my rules for life. You got any, Ross?
No.
Good. Right then, I'm going to finish with one big question, and it's a question that's been in the back of my mind, but bugging me for some time, friends. And the reason I'm going to ask you it now is because we're getting towards the business end of the season, and also I was in a shop in Woolpit last night, behind a couple of Ipswich Town fans who were chatting excitedly about Town, and one of them said what I've been thinking, and I thought this is a sign that I should ask the boys tomorrow. That question is thus: yes, we want Ipswich Town to be promoted. Of course we want Ipswich Town to be in the Premier League. It's where they belong. It's what we've been waiting for more than two decades. But, friends, if they get promoted at the end of this season, given Ashton's big master plan and all that kind of stuff, would it be too early? Because I don't want to be beaten around the bush, but Ipswich Town in the Premier League would get murdered next season. You look at Burnley, who everyone was wetting themselves about in the Championship last season. Oh, they play such good football. Oh, history. Oh, what an amazing manager. And look what's happened to them in the Premier League. They've won three games. So, Stu, I know you're going to give me a really sensible, considered answer now. Put my mind at ease. Ipswich Town go up. It's not too early, is it?
What does Ross think?
Oh, here we go. We're in trouble if we're asking Ross.
Well...
yeah,
this is controversial, but I don't even want to go to the Premier League. I think it's just rubbish, to be honest. It's great football, and obviously the superstars and stuff, but I sometimes just watch it, you know, watch Match of Day sometimes, just going, oh yeah, great football. But VAR, you know, just, yeah, and other teams who go up and they just go back down. And
well, if you look at the Premier League, the bottom three at the moment is the sides that went up last season. One of those, obviously, Burnley, was a record-setting, unbelievably attractive footballing side with a bright young manager everyone was raving about. And they've been largely killed in every game. And I was watching...
So at least what's that one? Vincent Kompany at least hasn't been sacked, so he's still there.
Oh, true. And I was watching on Sunday, I watched the Man City-Liverpool game. And the quality on display in that game was genuinely mesmeric and breathtaking. Like, the ability of the players is obscene. And then you think, take Ipswich and put Ipswich. I know Man City and Liverpool are the very top of the Premier League, but take Ipswich, and clearly they would strengthen over the summer, all that kind of stuff. But I just wonder, friends. Just wonder. Stu, what do you reckon?
It has crossed my mind from quite an early stage in this season that you can go up too soon for all the reasons that you've just outlined. But I just think, you never know when this opportunity might not come again. Course, and I think you've just got to get there, because it will completely change the financial landscape of the club in terms of, at the moment, you know, there was problems in January with being able to do, they've got the American money, but being able to spend it is another thing with FFP and everything. So just get yourself to the promised land, get all that TV cash, get the parachute payments behind you. And then, you know, if it ends up being like a Burnley type season, then so be it. But what's the alternative is you don't go up this year. Yes, you could argue you could build that little bit slower and be more prepared, but it could go the other way as well. You know, you might not get this same sort of opportunity again. You could plateau in the Championship. So I'm not going to sit here and say it would be a bad thing for Ipswich to get promoted. That's
no,
sure.
Of course not. Of course not. No, clearly, obviously, we want Ipswich Town to be promoted. That's what you want. You want Ipswich Town to be in the Premier League. But I do wonder, in terms of their master plan, the Ashton master plan, in terms of, I'd imagine they have a kind of time scale on achieving things, and surely they wouldn't have expected this season to be thinking genuinely about.
We just talked about which players would Kieran McKenna be coming for. We haven't reeled off half the team, have we, to be honest? And that's no slight on the players. I think there was a similar type of question in the mailbag a week or so ago, is that which of these players would be ready for the, you know, which of these players wouldn't be good enough for the Premier League. And I tried to give a fairly diplomatic answer in terms of when they went up from League One, there were question marks. Well, he hasn't got Championship experience. He hasn't done this. He hasn't done that. Yeah. And they've made that step up. Mm-hmm. I think to do it again to the Premier League would be a huge ask for some of these players. It's not like it's a Chaplins and Burns and people like that are in their sort of, you know, late 20s, and doesn't feel like necessarily a young team that's ready to kind of grow into the Premier League together necessarily. But Yeah, I'm reluctant to kind of say too much about kind of A, it's still a lot of work to be done to get to that point, and B, you want to be kind of respectful of what this group has done. But I think the Premier League would be a culture shock. I think as Burnley and others have found it, it's like you said, the standards at the top end of that league are frightening.
That game was just unbelievable. I don't know if you've seen any of it, but God, unbelievable. The ability of the players and some of the things they were doing, the patterns of play, it was literally mesmeric. Couldn't take your eyes off it. Anyway, we talk about Premier League. Oh, yes, Rossi.
So I want to go back to my point. I'm addicted to myself here. I'm doing a Ross thing here.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it'd be great to have Town in the Premier League. So I was very young when Town was back there. But I just don't think I'm going to enjoy it, because we will probably get smashed every week. And there's a lot of fans who say to me, like, oh, yeah, we'll just every game, you're like, oh, God, here we go. How many this week? I think we'll do okay, but maybe one season too soon. But I think this, we have got the club itself is just, it's sorted though, isn't it, in terms of like everything around it. So at least we're not going up just like some other teams have gone up before and they've not been prepared at all. And they just, you know, like Derby, or you know, they've got the record, haven't they, of like least points in the season. But in terms of just off the field, I think we're all set up. Obviously, the stadium is having to get improved and stuff like that. But yeah, we shall see. 9 games to go, boys.
Let's get there first, shall we, before we start worrying about it. But I thought it'd be interesting to talk about, and so it proved. I hope you'd agree, friends. Right, before we get on to Sheffield Wednesday, we've been talking about Premier League and players who might be able to cut it in the Premier League. Ross, today marks the 15th anniversary of a player I reckon would have been all right in the Premier League, you know. Giovanni Dos Santos signed for Town 15 years ago today. You've done something online about it. Just thought it'd be interesting to reflect on your memories of him, because you've written quite nicely about him. It still seems mental that he ever played for Town. And clearly, when you say Dos Santos, you then generally tend to follow it with the title of best lone player in Town history. Do you want to talk a little bit about Giovanni, Gio?
Yeah, on loan from Spurs. Of course, Jim McGilton signed him. I think I was 11 years old when he signed for Town. And he was just unbelievable. From the first game to his last game, just different class for that level. Mm. He was just above everybody. When he got the ball, you just got mesmerized by his ability to just run at players, his pace, his skill. Obviously, he's, you know, sort of was the star of the show in the last win against Norwich, which hopefully isn't the last until when we play them at Carrow Road and maybe in the playoffs. But yeah, he was just fantastic in that game. Great pass for Alan Quinn's opening goal. Of course, scored a penalty in that game as well. So anybody having to step up in a penalty in a derby is massive, but to give us the lead once again on that. But just the Mexican was just unreal. And as I think we did a podcast during the first sort of like lockdown, we like did about like best loan players, and he's definitely up there. And obviously we'll get on to a current Town loan in.
That's the obvious next question, which is kind of I want to talk about Dos Santos, because he is, I think, by consensus, probably the best lone player Town have had. But there's a genuine conversation, or at least there's starting to be a genuine conversation around Amari Hutchinson, Stu, and where he might stand in terms of best lone players, because he has been getting better and better as the season's gone on. He's a man for big moments. Where would you stand? Well, I mean, we've had some good lone players at Town over the years. Clearly, there was a time where it's been like every player on the side was a lone player on the sub-managers. We had like the likes of Tom Lawrence, didn't we? He was another star lone player. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, Ryan Fraser as well.
Ryan Fraser, that,
before he got injured. McCarthy era, every year it seemed like sort of the most talented player was borrowed and there was no chance of signing them. Are we talking here on pure ability? Because like Giovanni Dos Santos has gone on to play, 100-odd games for Mexico and... Strange career, really. It didn't happen for him at Spurs. I think injuries held him back. He's probably best associated with LA Galaxy, ultimately, in the end, Gio. But for me, when you kind of look back on best lone player ever, it's based not just on ability, but on moments as well. And that's probably why Martin Reusser probably tops that list for me in terms of firing Ipswich to the Premier League and coming back as well. And being a sort of a personality that people connected with. Can Amari take that? He's put some good foundations down this season with So many big moments already, going back to, I think, the Southampton away game, where he scored ultimately the winner there and dealt with kind of being ragdolled off the floor when they felt that he dived for a penalty. And that to me said, this is a young kid who's ready for senior football. And yeah, so many big moments recently with the stoppage time goals against West Brom and Rotherham and another one, remind me. it's been so many. It's ridiculous, isn't it? So, yeah, I guess he probably now needs to go on and do something that either caps securing a top two place or even does something special in a playoff setting. And I think maybe that would secure it, his legacy. Yeah,
100% I agree with you. And I think he's going to have the opportunity to do something like that in the way the season's going to play out. Okay.
The triple backflip at Wembley.
Imagine that. Absolutely. That would be perfect as they beat Norwich 5-0. Should we talk about Sheffield Wednesday, friends? This is a game this weekend. Give it 5-10 minutes or so before the end of the podcast. Kieran McKenna said yesterday, he told Alex that pretty much every single one of the games they've got left, 9 games, is against a side that's got something to play for, either in the promotion race or fighting for their life at the other end of the table. And certainly Sheffield Wednesday fall into that category. They're obviously at one point looked like they were dead and buried. Now they're just 1 point off safety. There's won 4 out of the last 5 games. Real turnaround in performances and fortunes under Danny Roll, who is the man who has already gone early on the cup finals, 10 cup finals left, he said, before they lost to Leeds over the weekend. How are we feeling about this one, Rossi? Because Sheffield Wednesday, again, before, not too long ago, you'd look at this game and go, yeah, Town win, no problem at all. But now Wednesday come, they're in decent form. They've got something to play for. This is a classic game that McKenna would say, respect all our opponents, and we'll have to be at our very best to beat them.
Have you seen that clip, by the way? Come on, Wednesday! On
Twitter. What's that?
I've seen it. Yeah, there's this guy getting filmed in the Sheffield Wednesday fan. He just goes, come on, Wednesday! it's played every Wednesday now, because obviously we're calling this on the Wednesday.
But, yeah.
Just a little side note there. But yeah, very different game. Of course, old friends. You know, we battled in League One. Obviously, they were like the Leicester of League One last season. You know, running away with it, and then they didn't run away with it. Obviously, Plymouth and us finished above them, and then obviously their mental playoff semi-final games. Mm. Obviously, Wembley themselves this year. Yeah, they've appointed Cisco Munez, who left very early and did do well, and then obviously now got Danny Roll, and they've done really well. Fair play to them. You know, 4 wins out of last 5, as you mentioned. It's one. Obviously, we want to win. We need to win to keep that to get back to winning ways. Obviously, after losing these at Cardiff, it won't be easy. But yeah, this is a different chat to what we would have had maybe a couple of months ago, where we've gone, easy 3 points on the board. This won't be as easy as we would hoped.
Mm. Stu, how old would you feel when you see Bailey Ty Cadamatri on the pitch, who is the son of a former Premier League wonder kid, Danny Cadamatri, of my era? He was like Rooney before Rooney, wasn't he?
He was the first player's name I ever got on the back of a football shirt, Danny Cadamatri, number 29.
Yeah.
Don't know how many letters in that surname off the top of my head, but when that was £1 a pop per letter, and I think you paid extra for double numbers as well. I don't think my parents were too happy that was the request. But the son of Danny, we're getting getting quite a few kind of sons of playing makes now, aren't we?
So old. Obviously Ian Wright's grandsons are playing now, which makes me feel even older. But how are you feeling about, Stu?
I watched the Sheffield Wednesday game in a pub in Cardiff on Friday night after we'd travelled across to South Wales. And
against Leeds, yeah?
Against Leeds, and I thought they were probably the better side in that first half at Hillsborough. Mm. Got hit with a sucker punch deep into first half stoppage time, and then from there kind of Leeds took over in the second half. But I was watching Wednesday thinking they've improved a fair bit, and some of their January signings are making an impact. The goalkeeper, James Beadle, he's only 19 on loan from Brighton. He looks very much 19 as well, a bit of a beanpole goalkeeper, but he looks good. Ugbo up front, I think, has scored 6 in his last 7 on loan from Cardiff. Yeah, and there's some familiar names in there, obviously the Barry Bannon and Liam Palmer and people like that. So, yeah, as you said, they looked dead and buried at one stage, and now they're right in it and fighting for their lives. So, I hope they're not too much of the sort of the type of opposition that Ipswich don't like to face, which is teams that kind of make it a game of chaos and high energy and in your face. And but I think they've got the ability to do that, but I think they'll try and play at times as well. And hopefully that will be more that sort of game, because that plays into Ipswich's hands.
Chaos theory. I like that. Stu, what would you do with, if anything, with the Town team? I know it's impossible to predict because we're sitting here on Wednesday. Not at the press conference yet. We don't know in terms of players emerging unscathed. But are there any obvious kind of changes you'd think about making in the side?
Just reminding myself of the team that played at the weekend. I think I said this in the podcast earlier in the week. I think Sarmiento's kind of shown he's a better finisher than than a starter from what we've seen so far. So I'd be surprised if he starts. Probably Nathan Broadhead back in for him. Beyond that, I would imagine that the bulk of the team is the one that you would sort of say is the team in general. Axel back in for Harry Clark is something under consideration, because Twan Zerbe's had a solid few games when he filled in at right back, but ultimately Clark is the kind of the first choice, inverted commas, right back, you would say. Can't see a huge amount beyond that, to be honest, looking at the team.
Okay. Shall we do predictions, Rossi? I know, appreciate again, it's Wednesday. They don't play till Saturday. There are a lot of unknowns. But what would we say? I was so close to getting 1-0 on Saturday. That was a real tragedy of Saturday.
I would have, and more as well. And more first goals.
Yeah, score. I would have really cleaned up. That's the real shame. What are you saying?
I'm going to go 2-1. 2-1 Town.
Who's going to score?
First goal scorer will be, I have gone a bit rogue recently.
You have.
Obviously, Cameron Burgess, Leif Davis. Obviously, Leif Davis could have got the first goal scorer, but Ali Hamadi decided to tap it in. Yeah. But I'm going to go maybe safe this time around. And let's go for a lovely, yeah, Connor Chaplin goal. So, Chappers, do it for me.
2-1, Connor Chaplin. Stewie is now checking what he predicted. Or have you abandoned that now, Stu? Because I'd imagine when you wrote that, Sheffield Wednesday weren't quite the side that they've rounded into.
Yes, I have kind of started to deviate from it a little bit. Yeah. But I was trying to just remind myself of out of interest. Go on, you go with yours while I'm just having a look.
I'm going to say, I mean, 2-1 is obviously tends to be the golden pick for Oilers. I'm going to say 2-0 though. Like a nice 2-0, solid 2-0. Although I do think it would certainly be a challenging game, I reckon. I'm going to say 2-0. I'm going to say, I'll go with Wes Burns, actually. Wes Burns has been good. Buoyed further by his Welsh call up again. His haircut is no longer bothering him. If anything, it's made him better, more streamlined, lighter, more of a threat. Am I filling enough, Stu? Have you got?
It's 13th of February. I wrote that piece.
Okay.
And I wrote at the time that Sheffield Wednesday have conceded 12 goals in their last three games, and things weren't looking too good for them. And I had Ipswich down as a 3-0 winners in that. They do score on average 3 goals a game at Portman Road, don't they? And you always fancy Ipswich to score goals. So I'll go with a 3 for Ipswich, and I'll put Sheffield Wednesday down for a single goal. I'll go 3-1 Ipswich Town, and I'll go Nathan Broadhead to score, just based purely on a gut feeling.
Okay, so for the record, we've got 2-1 Chaplin from Rossi, 2-0 Burns from myself, and 3-1 Broadhead from Stewie. AJ is obviously romping away with the title, it looks like. So he's is the one you really want to know, and we'll share that nearer the time, Rossi, won't we? Anything else to mention, friends, before we take our leave today? We've done 75 minutes of mainly mailbag fun. Anything else to mention, Rossi?
I've got another question for you boys. And this is a bit of a random one.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know why. I've got a song in my head at the moment. And I was going to ask you, have you got a song in your head that's just, you keep singing? Now, this song is a bit random. I don't know where I got it from.
Yeah.
The 90s song. It was released actually my year, 1996, from Baby Bird. And it's You're Gorgeous.
Oh, God. That is a dreadful dirge of a song.
Yeah, I don't know why. The lyrics I've got in my head is, because you're gorgeous, I'll do anything for you. I don't know why that is in my head, but I just thought I'd share it to you and the listeners. But have you got a song in your head at the moment you keep?
What, right now?
Yeah.
An earworm? Yeah. I can't say I have, to be honest. Stu, have you got music in your mind?
Not now, but I am very susceptible to that. I don't know if you get this, you hear a song on the radio first thing in the morning and then you just can't shake it.
I frequently annoy the wife by getting obsessed with one particular line from the chorus of a song, which I then sing probably for about 3 or 4 days until she threatens divorce. And I consider carrying on singing it. There are a number of earworms. Summer of 69, Bryan Adams is probably the most recent one I had because there was a band on holiday performing it. And I've had a few JD and Cokes, and I got quite into it, shall we say, friends. That stuck with me for a little while, as did the hangover. Anything from you two, anything else to mention?
No other business.
No other business. Friends, here endeth my return, my comeback podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. We've had some good questions. We've tackled some meaty topics. And let us know what you think about that particular one about town and promotion, because I think that'll probably divide the audience. Be interested to see what you have to say. Just a reminder to support our sponsors, Manscaped. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery on all that excellent clobber. Also, if you could, friends, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We've not had one of those for a while. Just helps lift us visibility-wise in the charts. And a reminder, at the moment, we've got an excellent, I think, offer on digital subscriptions. £4 gets you 4 months of all our coverage, or you can get 40% off a whole year. So for less than the price of a pint, depending on where you drink, and if you're getting a pint for less than £4, please tell me where you're drinking. You can get 4 months, which will take you far beyond the end of the season, whatever happens, playoffs or whatnot, which I think is a pretty good deal. That runs until a week today. So if you've not already signed up, or if you have and you've let it lapse, this is a good opportunity to join up again. If you'd like to support what we do, that'd be tremendous. Friends, Sheffield Wednesday at Portman Road this weekend. 9 cup finals left. The boys will all be there. So if you're going, say hello to them if you see them. If you're not, follow it all with us, friends, and we'll be back next week to break it all down. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you next time.